Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA and their fabulous yearly writers conference at pnwa.org. They're doing something now. They're offering, the conference normally costs about $500, something like that. And that includes meetings with agents and editors. We invite, I think, usually about a dozen editors and over 20 agents. Really covers all the genres. But if you want to sign up early, like now, you can take what we call a leap of faith. You get the conference for $100 less, I think, like $375 or $395. And on top of which, you can sign up for extra meetings with pitch sessions with agents. It's a leap of faith because we don't yet know what agents are coming. But if you don't care, if you think there's going to be someone there that's interesting to me, you can sign up now and get a special rate and special opportunities to meet even more agents and editors. So you can find out about the PNWA, the conference, their classes, their weekly or monthly meetings, which you can attend either virtually via the internet or in person if you live in the Northwest, by going to pnwa.org. It's pnwa.org. You know, I should mention, I write now for the, I post fairly regularly now on the Huffington Post. If you're a fan of the Huffington Post, you can find my essays there, my blogs and stories. I write primarily in the books section, where I'm a featured blogger. And I also write in the parenting section, less frequently, and well, if you want to check it out, go over to the Huffington Post. You can also just find me. I have my own little, go search Bill Knauer or William Knauer at thehuffingtonpost.com, where I write about the kind of things we talk about today. And like you may have noticed, if you're listening live, that this is a special time and a special day, and that's because I got kind of a special guest, Dr. Bernie Siegel, who I interviewed, I think, about this time last year, and I just love talking to him. I love talking about, well, Bernie's got a great point of view on life, healing, the spirit, medicine, writing, you name it, really just on what it is to be human. Honestly, I would have him on the show whether he had a book out or not. It just so happens that he does have a book out. He's got one of his latest. He's gotten a lot of books too. This is his latest, Love Animals and Miracles. Sounds good to me. Let's talk to Bernie about all those things. Bernie, is that you?
It's me, all right.
Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. I like to often say to people that somebody said when they came to our cancer support group one day, I said, "Tell us why you're here." He said, "I'm here because I'm not all there." So I think that, you know, we're all learning how to get there.
Bernie, I totally agree. What is there to you? When you say trying to get there, what is there?
It's life. You know, all the questions we have, like, and I mean this literally, that things I puzzled over as a doctor. Why did God make a world where children get cancer? With
right.
All the other troubles, you know, that happen. You end up really searching. And in the search, it's wonderful to come across enlightened people. Because often at a workshop, I'll say to people, if you could be God for a day, why would you want to be God? And of course, almost everybody's fixing everything. But I learned that the right answer is, and this came from the Baal Shem Tov, who was a rabbi in Russia watching the persecution of Jews going on, and he said, "I wish I were God." And his students said, "Oh, you'd stop this." He said, "No, but I'd understand why." Boy,
yeah.
That hit home
what?
For me. And then
yeah.
I came across a story, fiction and fun, you know, a humorous story in which God, it's called The Next Voice You Hear. That's the name of the story. This is before television. Every radio in every country hears the same message in their own language. Hello, this is God. And everybody thinks, what a joke. But then they realize it can't be a joke. It happened everywhere at the same moment. And what was the basic message I got out of that? A perfect world is not creation. It's a magic trick. You're here to live and learn. Yeah. And, you know, just as you say, my latest book, The Love, Animals, and Miracles, who do we learn from? Again, what does the Bible tell us? Learn from the animals. Learn from the trees. You know, learn from nature. Because they are complete. And we're not. But that, again, gives our lives meaning. If we had a perfect world, we'd all be going nuts. You wouldn't need articles. You wouldn't need weather reports. You wouldn't need anything. You'd say, well, it's another day. How boring. But when it isn't all preordained, then it gives meaning. So I say, you get home. Well, let me give you an example. See, if I get home and my family loves me, I know it's real that they are making a choice. And I mean it. One of our kids emailed my wife and I to say, I want you to know I love you and thank you for the kind of parents you were. And I'm sending you this. So if something ever happened to me, I want you to know it, you know, and get the message. Mm-hmm. Well, that really touches my heart. And you can bet I saved that. But I was lying on a massage table. Some friend came to our house to give me a treatment. He wanted to be good to us, you know, like a gift. Mm-hmm. So I'm lying down with my face facing the floor in that padded circle.
Yeah.
Suddenly I feel cold, wet on my face. And I thought, what is that? And I open my eyes, and it's my little dog, Rag, his lick in my face. Now, you see, that was his choice. You know what I mean? He came to me.
Yeah.
He gave me that love. But you expect it from him. On the other hand, I have to say, the therapist said, I've never seen a dog do that in all the years I've been doing it. But, see, I know he loves me. But, again, you expect that from the dog. You know, he's being nice to me, lying there and hopes everything's okay. But when you get that email from your child, that's, you know, beyond the normal response. That's something he thought about and took time to do. And I'd say that's what we're all here to learn. You know, I always say to people, WWLD, when you got a problem. They say to me, what are you talking about? I say, just ask yourself, what would Lassie do? And then go do it.
It's good. You know, it reminds me, one of the sort of mottos I live by, in a way, I think everything I'm trying to teach and write comes down to one little sentence. Because I think this is sort of how animals see the world. I have a couple cats, and I feel this is how they see it. Which is that everything is okay, even though it looks like everything is not okay. Does that make sense? Everything is okay,
yeah.
Even though it looks like everything's not okay.
Well, it's again, the learning from all these things.
Yeah.
So I always say, and not just me, Joseph Campbell and many other people, Joseph Campbell said it in these words, when you're going through hell, ask yourself, what am I to learn from this? And I'd say the animals are looking at it in the same way. Okay, something happened. What am I to learn? I mean, we've had people working on the house because we had a roof leak and a lot of damage inside and so forth. And some of our cats would just disappear when the workmen show up. And I mean literally disappear. I couldn't find them under furniture, everywhere, trying to feed them and do things. But now, you know, a couple of weeks later, they're out walking around. It's safe. We know. And so, you know, they take care of themselves, but they learn from it. And they make their judgment, and then they decide what they're going to do.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got a long bibliography of books, and it seems to me that, in a way, you could reduce that bibliography down to two words, which are love heals.
Right.
What do you think?
Yes, I loved something. I don't remember whether I said it or not, because, you know, when you're reading things with your name on them and Facebook and everywhere else, did I say that? Well, it's nice. Yeah, I hope I did. But it was, you know, love is the best treatment for everything, every problem. And somebody said, but what if it's not working? Increase the dose. You know? And so many philosophers have said the same thing. If only you could love enough, from Emmett Fox, you know, the end of his statement. If only you could love enough, you'd be the most powerful being on the planet. And I tell people, the term I use now is love warrior. Because I was reading an article where somebody wrote, you could be a lover, you can be a warrior, see? And I thought, he needs to understand you can be a love warrior. That love.
And how do you do that?
How do you do that? Well, when somebody says, you took my freaking parking lot, you SOB, I lower my window and say, I love you. And they don't know what the hell to do with you then. I mean it.
Right.
I mean,
Yeah, sure.
Well, let me give you another example. You'll understand where it's really coming from. We were up in Cape Cod, summertime, terrible traffic. There's a teenager driving the car behind me with, I think, his girlfriend in it, and screaming at everybody. But I'm in front of him, so it's like he's blaming me. You know, all the traffic. And I came to a corner. I said to the cop, can you tell him to stop screaming? And
right.
The cop said, it's not my job. That really surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But I then got out of my car.
Oh, no.
Yelling, he could have a gun, he could have a gun.
Right.
I went over to him, you see, and what did I say? I said,
I love you.
And then I added this for therapy. I'm sorry, your parents don't.
And what did
and
he say?
I walked back to my car. He didn't say a single word, but he made a U-turn all the way.
I
know what I said was true, see?
Of course.
I mean, all the headlines we're reading are because those people did not grow up with love. They grew up with the opposite love, indifference, rejection, and abuse. So they're taking revenge. And then they're feeling guilty, and they let the police kill them or they kill themselves. But if they grew up with love, and I mean it, love from anyone, it could be your school teacher, your doctor, your clergyman, your politician, it doesn't matter. You know, if the president got up every day and said, I love every one of you, you know, and you really felt he meant it, you know, that what I'm doing is for all of you because I love you, we'd feel very differently about it. And even in concentration camps, when people, you know, the inmates said to the German, you know, soldiers, I love
guards,
you.
Guards.
Yeah, the guard. They were more likely to end up in a work camp than in the gas chamber.
Yeah.
You know, because there was some guilt, too, in the guard as well. And what's his name? Nelson Mandela. I always think of him. See, it's for your own sake you're doing this. He said when he left, you know, got out of prison, he said, I knew that if I didn't forgive those who imprisoned me, I would be in prison for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So he forgave. And forgive me for never stopping talking, but you see, here's where the animal eats us. And this, I don't know if this is in the book or not, but it may well be, because I have so many stories from so many pets we had. We rescued a little rabbit out in the woods. I wrote a little book about it called Smudge Bunny, but it was a black and white rabbit in the woods. We were able to put out a have-a-heart trap and catch it and bring it in. The white one didn't last one night. I'm sure other predators saw it and got it, but the black one we got in, called him Smudge, and he became a house rabbit, just a pet running around the house. But about 10 days after I brought him in, with all the vets telling me, be very careful that your dogs and other animals in the house, you know, aren't left alone with the rabbit till they get to know each other. I thought after 10 days, because I had stepped out of the house and didn't close the pet door to the front yard where the rabbit was, that they must know each other by now. But I was wrong, and I got home, and the rabbit had been really grabbed by, you know, in the jaws of one of the dogs named Furphy. And I felt, believe me, so guilty. But 2 weeks later, I go out in the yard because I always used to bring the rabbit in at night to protect her. I mean, it's fenced in, but I still didn't feel good with a rabbit outside by herself. And I didn't worry about the cats and the dogs wandering. So I would bring her in at night. And I couldn't find her that evening. I'm going around the yard, yelling, looking, yelling, nothing. And I saw the dog, Furphy, lying there in the front yard. So I walked over to him just to give him a pet. And what do I notice? Behind him, tucked in against his back, was the rabbit. She was hiding behind him, so I wouldn't see her, and I couldn't bring her in because she liked me outside. But you see, that touched my heart. Here's a threat to her life, you know, and here she is 2 weeks later, they're best of friends. And another story that's in there from our grandson, Charlie. Again, these are all true stories about animals that people sent in and I comment on. He had a turtle who, according to the vet, as it got older, their personality changes. You know, it's probably like getting to be a teenager and your hormones kick in. So he was acting funny and wasn't eating and depressed, and Charlie was worried. And the vet said, well, you got to get him something exciting, some fresh food. Get him a little fish to eat. And that didn't strike home with Charlie because he didn't want to kill a fish. But the vet said, look, if you're going to help him, if he's not eating, you've got to get something for him. So Charlie goes and buys a little fish, takes it home, drops it in the tank, and then stands there, see, expecting his heart to be broken. But what happens? The turtle and the fish swim over to each other, rub noses, and became best of friends. They live together, eat together, and enjoy the tank. And again, it's like, how the hell does that happen? But the animals are just amazing in their caring for each other. You know, we all get photographs of, you know, things like tigers with a little pig nursing from a mama tiger. And you'd say, why didn't it eat the pig? But no, it's that feeling within them. It's just getting to know our true selves and that we're all the same. But let me add this. Because the kids understand it. When I speak in schools, you know, third grade, fifth grade, I say, where are we all alike? I have a picture of one of you and you can't tell who it is. And they immediately point at their chest, at their hearts.
I really feel there ought to be a
mirror at the front of every public building that says, look at how beautiful and meaningful it is. And then a picture of a heart and say, which of your friends is this a picture of? You know, that as a surgeon, we're all the same. Yeah. We're all the same color and structure internally. You know, we're different outside, so we know. I always say, if we were all the same outside, you who are you know, making dinner for? so we want to be able to pick each other out, I had identical twin cousins who used to switch place in school. And I've read about other twins who have done that, you know, where one of them was good at a certain subject, so he'd take a test twice while his brother was in the other room and not threatened.
That's so funny.
But again, you know, it's our identity, our truth. It's what's within us is what's significant.
Yes, and that's why as writers... They do. And I think with writers, you're always connecting to that part of you that's, well, where the stories are, which was within you. And I feel that when I teach my students, what I encourage them to do or what I try to remind them is that they're connecting with their readers through that part of them that is universal, that is not about what race they are, what gender they are, how old they are, what religion they are, but that universal non-physical part of themselves is where they meet their readers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Just an interesting story for you if you're a writer. I was an artist as a child, very visual. Mm-hmm. The only C I received in 4 years of college was in creative writing. It kept me from getting highest honors, you know? I have to add my sense of humor. After I had a book as number one on the best-selling list, New York Times, I wrote to the college, Colgate, and I said, how about giving me a B, and then I would be summa cum laude graduate. And they wrote, right. See, they didn't have a sense of humor in the office. I mean, I thought they'd get a kick out of it, but I got this really right. serious letter back about right. how we cannot alter grades after graduation.
Right.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, the author who helped me most, because I used to, before the computer, write letters to everyone. I mean, I would just sit and write, and then yeah. send it. Yeah. You know, I didn't stop and think, which is what I did in college as a science major. But in this story, Saroyan writes about a writer who is working for the army and writing stories about the war. And into the office comes his assistant, and the writer says to him, hey, you're quite a good writer. And the young guy says, what are you talking about? I've never written anything. Oh, that letter on your desk to your father. He says, that's a letter to my father. And the author says, yeah, so write a letter to everyone.
Yeah.
That hit home for me. And literally, I write a newspaper article, and it starts out, I mean, every week for a local paper, dear everyone. And I just let it go, you know? And I think if we all wrote letters to everyone, we'd all become writers. And I don't worry, I have to say, about punctuation and capitals, because lots of times I get an email saying, excuse me, I got this email from somebody in your office, and they, you know, are not very. I say, that's not them, that's me.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know. When I first started writing a daily kind of column, blog type thing, I was writing stories about my own life, the question I would ask myself is, how could I tell this story so that someone who doesn't know me would care about it? Someone who's never met me and never will meet me will find this story useful. And that question guided me to that sort of universal thing that I could share with everybody. And I began imagining myself talking to this aspect of myself that didn't care about Bill, you know, Bill's little world and Bill's little interests, but that greater Bill, so to speak. And that's the one that I talk through, hopefully, and too. And it sounds like the same thing that you're doing with your when you say
what
hello,
I learned
everybody.
I always forget the author's name. As a visual person, I'm terrible at names. But a Hispanic authoress who said, while she was discussing something, there's only one thing truer than the truth, a story. And I learned that at the hospital, to tell stories. Because when other doctors were criticizing me, you know, that's poorly controlled study, that was a lousy right. journal, they probably altered the result, you know, and I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm not here to fight over the, you know, science of something, because I would mention something that supported what I was saying. So I began telling stories, and then nobody felt threatened. Well, he told an anecdote, he told a story, it's one patient. But guess what? They would show up saying, hey, I got a story for you. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
And that opened their minds, because one of their patients would suddenly demonstrate the story. And then, hey, maybe Siegel wasn't so crazy. Let me talk to him about it. So I found telling stories helped change people more than arguing with them. And let me tell you the trouble, too, with the intellect. A Yale graduate medical student wrote an article about the cancer patients I was working with and did a study, you know, with a control group and them and so forth. And it showed that the people who joined the support group had a better survival statistic than those who didn't. And guess what his professor did?
Made him
do it again.
He said
that can't be true, and he made him alter the results. Can you imagine a professor at Yale saying to a student, that can't be true? But you see, the nice thing that did happen was that those who said Siegel isn't right, I'll do a study to prove he's wrong. Then, you see, when it came out, I wasn't wrong. Those who were honest enough said, look, I did it. He's right. You see, look at the survival statistics. Yeah. And then they were honest and they changed. And that carried more of an impact than if I had said it. And it's crazy when you, I always say people live by your experience, not by your beliefs. I mean, one of my, to get back to animals for a minute, one of my things that I thought was nuts was being in California at an ASPCA non-kill conference as a speaker And I get in the elevator to go back up to my room, and there's a nice lady in the elevator. So I say, hello, why are you here at the conference? Oh, I'm an animal intuitive. I said, what do you mean? Well, I communicate with animals. I said, yeah, that's really nice. And I thought to myself, well, here's a nutcase. She talks to animals. So what do? You see, I challenge her. This is Amelia Kincaid, who's written stories in my book, and I ended up writing a foreword for her book. You see, because what converted me? The truth, the experience. I emailed her, not a phone call, and I said, Amelia, in the email, this cat has disappeared. It's been gone in the woods for 3 weeks, because we live in a wooded area in Connecticut. I said, it's probably dead, but can you let me know? She emailed me back without even a photograph of the animal, which always amazes me. And she's in California, and I'm in Connecticut. And she's told me where the cat was, described the house, all the other pets. Unbelievable. One thing was confusing. Wow. She said to me, the cat's under the house. Now, that made no sense. How does a cat get under a house? But the next morning, I realized where the cat was, because I kept screaming its name for 15, 20 minutes and finally heard a cry. Yeah. And under a stairway that came off the house that does go down to the ground on both sides. And apparently the cat had squeezed herself in there to protect herself, you know, at night and so forth. Because she never came out to eat or do anything. And I rescued her. And once, again, while Amelia was in Africa doing some work there with animals, a cat disappeared in the house. And I thought it was in the basement and it didn't want to come out. Because it knew it wasn't supposed to be there. You know, like I'll punish it if I find her. And Amelia described the basement again in such detail. It was unbelievable. So I knew the cat was in there. And sure enough, when I left the house so the cat wouldn't be afraid of coming out, my wife and a friend opened the door and the cat came running out. Because, you see, the cat knew I had left, if you know what I mean. It's the communication is through consciousness, nonverbal. And even that rabbit I was talking about, when I couldn't catch her in the evening, I said to her in my head, because Amelia always says, Bernie, don't get upset and start screaming the animal's name. Quiet your mind, you'll get into their mind. I said to the rabbit, why don't you let me bring you in? And what are the answer I get back? You don't treat the cats this way. I thought, what the hell are you talking about? And I said to the rabbit, what do you mean? She said, well, you don't make the cats come in the evening. I said, yeah, because they can take care of themselves if some other creature came in. You can't. I'm trying to protect you. And from that night on, really, I didn't have trouble bringing her in, except that night she hid behind the dog. It was like a game. You know, she would play with me. But those are the things, I say, that blow my mind when you ask an animal, why did you act that way? One of them, named Buddy, I wrote a book, see, again, the consciousness, called Buddy's Candle, about a boy and his dog who developed cancer and how the dog becomes the teacher. You know, enjoy the day. Don't worry about next year. And when I finished the book, I heard a voice say to me when I went out to walk the other dog, go to the animal shelter. I went there. To make a long story short, I stepped inside. There's a dog sitting by the door. I said, what's his name? His name is Buddy. He's been here less than 15 minutes. I said, I'm taking him home. And believe me, that is not the first time that has happened to me. Because I get a signal. See, I'm aware of that consciousness. And when I get the signal, go to the animal shelter, I always go in and there's an animal there that has something special about it. And I'll say, I'm taking it home. I mean, it could be my name, my father's name. My father was Simon, so I've had a dog and a cat named Simon. And I don't tell them any more names of our family anymore. But, you know, it's something special, and I end up taking it home. And those are the things that I think if we all kept ourselves, you know, that consciousness open and not thinking, not be turbulent, what I call the still pond, so that the ugly duckling sees he's a swan. But if he was cursing his mother for throat, well, these are the words of a person, see, not the ugly duckling, but a person. My mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer. She dressed me in dark clothes, told me I was a failure who embarrassed her, and I would never amount to anything. And after she got cancer, that woman made such a transition. She literally saved her life and is somebody you can be proud of today, who's doing so much for herself and others. But again, the animal doesn't need that help. They know. They're not worried about what mama said. We are, yeah. But the love, if you love your child, you make all the difference in the world.
That is the perfect note on which to end this too short conversation. Bernie, it has been a pleasure chatting with you once again.
You're a good man, Bill, to be open to this, because I mean it. It's hard to get.
Thank you.
The men are into doing. I've had men say, there's no point in living. I can't work anymore. And the women are saying, I can't die till you're all married and out of the house.
Right.
We need to care and love ourselves and our children.
We do indeed. We do. And it's so good to hear. Bernie, I'll have you back the next time you got a book. Love Animals and Miracles is what's out there now. Just keep doing what you're doing, my friend.
Remind me to talk to you about Maimonides and a lady decided to smoke outdoors because her cats were getting sick.
All right, we'll save it for next time.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Bernie.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you, children. Love everybody. What do I say at the end of every show? Go do something you love. Bernie knows. All right, well, next week I'll be here talking to Gabriel Myers, memoirist extraordinaire. And then I'm going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays, and I'll be back with Marilyn Jennett the first of the year. Until then, just as Bernie said, go do something you love. Go with someone you love. You can't go wrong. No, you can't.